So, if you're anything like Axel, you're probably on your fourth D&D campaign and are really struggling to generate new NPC names. Or maybe you're like me and you just insist on giving names to every single one of your space marines. Or maybe you're having a baby here soon and you're sick and tired of all those boring baby naming books. Well then, I suggest you pick up Naming Your Little Geek by Scott Rubin, a perfect compendium of names from all over pop culture, complete with brief character synopses, origins, and root words. A fascinating read on its own. But really useful if you're trying to find a non-pun name for your Wi-Fi. Use the link in our description below and get naming. All right, going live in 3, 2, 1, and hello and welcome to Geeks with Shields, your home for all things good and nerdy in this, the darkest timeline. I'm Lord Commander Orc, and with me as always is...
His shield brother, Axel Wright.
How's it going today?
Going okay. I was extremely tired through most of the day, and I'm not sure why I didn't get less sleep than I normally do last night, but I'm all right now. How are you?
I have bourbon, so it's all good.
Ah, fair. I do not have any drinks on hand. I don't have any other things exciting to share unless you want to talk about Tekken. So,
yeah, I heard you've been playing a lot of Tekken, and we're not going to run the risk of this becoming the Tekken podcast.
Yeah, don't worry about that. But I do have at least, I bought it for two people other than me. I bought it for my friend Drunken Snail, and I bought it for Wretched. Wretched hasn't played with me yet, but Drunken Snail's been having sets with me, and I've been having a great time. It's a great game.
You're going to want to emphasize that second word a bit harder.
Sets, S-E-T-S. Yes.
We are not, you know, no impropriety here, folks.
Fair. Anyway, moving on.
Yeah, anyway, moving on to our favorite part of the podcast, the part where we shout out our patrons who give us money so we can do fun things like talk about Axel's sets in Tekken. Our wonderful, wonderful patrons. They are Pam Galley, Marquee, Chris Shipman, River Galley, Krug, Arthur Crane, Kevin Vey, Brandon Andrew, John Vinyl, Skip, Kenny, Seth Decker, Dona Lucy, Carson Mel, Scott Ribbon, Derek Guy, and Peter Cook. Now, if you'd like to join the Illustrious Legion, head over to patreon.com/geekswithshields. If you join at the $5 tier, you'll get access to all sorts of extra bonus content, and best of all, we'll actually see some of that money from Patreon.
And if you're listening to this and didn't see the title of the episode, which is perfectly valid if you're like working out and just let your podcast platform go, then we have a guest today, a friend of the podcast of several time guest appearances. Go ahead and introduce yourself.
Hey everybody, this is Scott Rubin, sometimes known as Norse Meat Online, but yeah, I'm a big geek, huge fan of these guys, and I'm happy to be here again.
It's funny to think that you started like in our Warhammer segment, then you just kind of crossed over into all the other episodes because you're just such a good guest.
I'm just glomming on wherever I can. I just love to talk.
For folks...
You know, plus, we made a channel that originally was basically just for Scott that has now become the haven of debauchery and that kind of humor.
Yeah, if you're not in our Discord, you should be, because we got Scott's Corner, which is I don't go there anymore. It's the basement. There's black mold. I know it's a problem someday, but you know what? That day's not today.
But it's funny black mold.
It's definitely a good time over on the Discord. So yes, absolutely join up if you're not already there.
Anyway, Ulrich, we have it's a new format. We're basically taking another format we've done and kind of just tweaking it a little bit, but it's got a new name and it's got a new shine. So introduce the listeners to it.
Yeah. Today, we're trying out a new show format. We're calling it Talk Nerdy to Me, which is a fun little one we want to mix in that we have a guest come on and talk to us about one of their nerdy hobbies and just kind of, well, talk to us about their nerdy hobby. It seemed a great way, because we have a lot of interesting guests on, a lot of interesting friends. We're like, oh, that's a really interesting hobby you've got there. If only there was a way we could monetize it.
Yeah, so it's kind of like our Pillars of Geekdom, but with a focus on hobby.
Yeah.
Instead of just, you know.
Also, peek behind the curtain, we needed more guest themed episodes, like guest topics we could pitch out to first-time guests. And this one popped in my head, and like, oh, people got all sorts of cool shit they're into. I want to talk to them about that. What if we made a whole episode about it?
Well, I mean, if you're looking at how the sausage is made, part of the joy, I think, of podcasts in general is watching people talk about things that they have genuine excitement and love for. So giving guests the literal written opportunity to do that feels like something I'm invested in doing.
Yeah, and Scott's here because as soon as I came up with this idea, Scott was one of the first people I thought of like, Scott's got a lot of interesting hobbies, some of which we can talk about on the podcast.
True.
Some of those are going to be a separate podcast called Geeks with Shields After Dark, but that's still in production.
I can't wait. But for now,
I was on a stream that got suspended from Twitch. So
you get to add that to your list of achievements. You got banned on Twitch.
Uh-huh.
I take that as a badge.
Given it was over something so stupid and trivial, yes.
Anyway, so I was not told ahead of time what hobby Norse Meat here was going to bring to us. So why don't you tell us and the listeners, what hobby are we talking about today?
Yeah, so among all of the other things that I do and that I'm into, I am a pretty hardcore toy collector. And it's something I've been doing for a really long time. And I think it's a lot of fun and interesting. And I would love to share that with other people.
You won't let me raid your house for all your Plo Koon merch.
I do have a lot of them.
I know we've done an episode in the past. It was with Woonvog, if I remember correctly, where we talked about our nostalgic toys. I think that's the only time I've ever touched a topic like that on the podcast, at least. I remember because I edited it.
Yeah, Scott has a pretty impressive collection. I've seen it many times. I've coveted it many more, and I may or may not have a blueprint of his house with sticky notes and red string.
All right, let's get the first, where to start except at the start, right? So the first and obvious question is, how did you get into this as a hobby? I feel like with this particular topic, anyone could be like, well, I liked toys as a kid. But there's a difference between liking toys and collecting toys as a hobby, I think.
Yeah, for sure. I was lucky growing up as a kid. I had a ton of toys. My parents were happy to provide me and my brother with a bunch of toys. And I still have a fair amount of toys from when I was little that I've kept all this time. Even though they may not necessarily be anywhere near the most expensive or hard to have tracked down things in my collection, they're super meaningful because, you know, again, my parents gave them to me or I got them for a special occasion. And I can remember exactly when I got some of these, you know, that I still have. A couple of Robotech toys, you know, again, that I got when I was little. I've got my Kenner Superpowers Green Lantern. I have a couple of Starcom toys. Unfortunately, I had a lot more when I was little, but the rest of them went away. And my God, would it be expensive to recreate that collection these days? So I sort of always loved toys and had a bunch of them and kept them around. And you know, when it got to be, I think as many people, when they get to a certain age, when they have a little bit of spending money and also a space of their own, then it was like, oh, I can buy my own toys and actually put them up and display them. So really for me, it was grad school. When I went to grad school at UCSB, I was living in graduate housing, and I had my own room and I shared a two-bedroom apartment with one other person, and I had my own room, and I didn't have a lot of stuff at that time. So I was like, I'm going to get some shelves and bring out the toys, you know, that I had from storage, and I'm going to start buying some more. The internet definitely helped. And, I'm going to date myself here, but while I was in grad school was when Star Wars Episode II came out in theaters. And that in particular, I got a lot of those toys.
Star Wars toys
were
sick.
It was so good. And especially for Star Wars Episode II, there was a promotion at Kmart where if you bought two action figures, you got like a scratch-off ticket, and then that would give you points or, you know, like a free action figure.
I have vague memories of this.
Yeah, it was something like that. And there was a Kmart right near me, and I knew a guy who worked there, and he would just kind of like slip me those scratch-offs.
Nice.
And man, I got so many toys from Episode II. It very quickly became a centerpiece of my growing collection at the time.
It's funny because I think about some of my favorite toys when I was younger, and I think about like, man, a nice super posable jointed General Grievous toy would have been the shit.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. Some of those original ones were like, ugh.
I'm still after an ATTE in any scale that's not Lego.
Sure. Yeah. So, and then, you know, like I said, in grad school, I was collecting things, and then leaving grad school and I've moved various times over the years, but I would continue to add to the collection. And then finally, in the house where I live now with my family, it just so happens that this house had a really weird small front room that was, it's not a living room. It's not, you know, it's not connected to anything. It's just the sort of like a, you walk in the front door, there's a little room, and then you go through that into the rest of the house. And I, when we moved here, you know, I asked my wife, I was like, maybe this could be a toy room. And we didn't have anything else we needed to do with it at the time. And this was before we had our kids. So she allowed it to be the toy room. And it's only grown and filled from there.
So I definitely feel like that particular hobby, there's one question I got to get out. But I want to preface with a little story that you made me think of that I haven't thought of in probably over a decade. When I was, I want to say like 5 years old, so I was very young. And because of that, my perception of how big this was is probably warped. But I was taken to a friend of my mother's house who had a room that it was like a living room size, like a normal, I don't know, but like larger than a bedroom. And he had a wall where that entire wall was covered in Batman toys. And I have this very strong memory of looking at it, but he was one of those people that they were all in their packaging. So I couldn't touch any of them.
Yeah. So that brings us to sort of, so when you're in the world of toy collecting, there are a couple of sort of very distinct categories that you can fall under. And the first one is that one. Do you open your toys or do you not open your toys?
Yep.
There are people out there who love sort of the aesthetics of toys and the toy packaging. They're very concerned with value, and so they keep their toys in their packages. And then, and again, like you said, Axel, these people will display the packages. Sometimes they'll build special shelves or racks on their walls to display them, and that's their thing. That has never been me. I take home a toy, and if I don't open it immediately, I put it in my closet as sort of like, this is something fun for a future rainy day, but I'm going to open this toy. And yeah, all of my stuff is open.
Go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, yeah. No, I was basically, yeah, I open everything that I only buy things with the intention to open it and put it on my shelf for sure.
Yeah. As an adult, I have nothing against someone who is of the mentality of keeping things in the packages for value and whatnot. I get it. There ain't nothing wrong with that. You do what you want with your property. But as a five-year-old looking at that wall of Batman toys that I couldn't touch, that felt like torture.
Yeah, that's yeah,
like, why? Why?
I get people like, no, this is an investment. It's like, cool, but isn't it also a hobby? Like, shouldn't it bring you, you know, joy? And what's more joyful than, you know, opening the toy you never got as a kid?
Yeah, that's why I'm saying, like, I get it as an adult, but I feel like, especially if you have kids, I'm trying to imagine being like a toy collector with kids, but being the kind, but being the keep it in packaging. Like,
yeah,
there's got to be a little resentment from your kids if that's the case.
Well, there's probably a lot of resentment.
All about.
Yeah, basically, all good toy collectors who have kids, you rapidly learn that when you're out buying something for you, try to pick up something for the kids too at the same time, so that you can give them stuff from time to time and keep them occupied while you have your own collection.
That's perfect sense. Got to distract them. Mm-hmm.
But I mean, I still remember.
I mean, I know
the awkward silence.
Yeah, go ahead, Scott.
I was going to say that. Yeah, I know other toy collectors who have massive collections of toys that are still in the package, and again, some of the way they display them is really tasteful and looks really cool. But yeah, every time I look at that, I'm like the 5 year old. I'm like, I just want to open those toys. I want to play with them.
No,
yeah,
the cool collection.
This guy with the Batman wall, it wasn't a shelf. It was like he had literally turned his wall into what looked like a store wall. Like they were hanging.
I can kind of get that. Like I have my own private toy store. But that said, the really cool displays are the people that build like dioramas to go with them. Because in the toy catalogs, which our younger viewers have no idea what it is, the toys never looked cooler than they did in the catalogs, where they had these big elaborate setups for them to play with, or the commercials.
If I remember correctly, though, Ulrich is also the kind of person who would glue his Legos in a diorama.
Yes, because fuck Legos.
Oh, man.
Anyway.
Brutal.
Anyway, Scott, you mentioned other categories. I'm curious what other ones there are, because I don't know the hobby beyond the classic stereotype of don't open the toys.
Yeah, for sure. And it comes up in the story that you told as well. So like that person that you were talking about was a Batman collector. So in the toy collecting world, a lot of people collect either a specific character, a specific toy line, or a specific scale. And we can get into that in a minute. Like basically the general size of the toys. Or if they're like especially hoity-toity, they'll be like, oh, I only get toys from Japan and blah blah blah. and then there are people like me. I have a very large toy collection and it is extremely eclectic. I have my whole idea about toys is I'm absolutely still a kid at heart, and if I see something that I like, I'm going to put it in my collection. It doesn't necessarily have to fit in with anything else. I have shelves where it's just random stuff, but I like it. And you know, I would say that a large percentage of my toy collection is stuff that I got at mass market, which means that I got it at Target, I got it at Toys R Us, I got it at Walmart, I got it on Amazon. It's not something that I had to hunt down really hard or, you know, buy it from an importer. But it's just stuff that I like. One of the things that I'm proud of, if you know, you can say that about a toy collection, I have a shelf that is entirely Ben 10 toys. And if you're not familiar with Ben 10, it was a cartoon on Cartoon Network. It went through various different versions.
So many versions.
Essentially, it's about a kid. Too many versions.
Yes, too many.
But it's a kid who, with a technological device, can turn into all these different kinds of aliens. And I just absolutely fell in love with the designs. And I collected that line hard, and I have a very, like I said, a very expansive collection of that. And again, all of these toys were things that I could just go to the store and buy, and there's nothing super special about them. None of them are exclusive to any event, but it just made me really happy to collect that line of toys. Some toy collectors out there would look down on that, which is weird, but so be it.
It is funny because when I think about the concept of toy collecting, there are, I think about like, okay, I've only met like one real serious toy collector in person, and I was 5, so I couldn't talk to him about it. So my knowledge of what toy collecting is has been formed by when it has shown up in television and movies. And when I think about that, there are two things that pop up in my brain. One I've already mentioned, which is the do you or do you not open? And the other is the idea of like the, how do I phrase this? You mentioned like exclusives, but I have a strong memory of seeing a bunch of examples of like, not only is this exclusive, but this was like some mistake. Like this was only made in this factory, and therefore
it's the Darth Vader with the green lightsaber.
Yeah. Like, I don't know if there's a name for this type of collector, but that's the other thing that pops up in my head when I think about this hobby.
Yeah, no, for sure. I happen to, again, in this weird community, I happen to know somebody who talk about specifics. This guy only collects items that were made by one company, but not items that you could ever buy, only the prototypes of the toys that company
made. Oh boy.
So
that's gotta be expensive.
Yeah, I mean, insanely. And I'm not even gonna talk about the company, because this guy has sworn me to secrecy on many of the things that he's told me, but borderline illegal things he's had to do to accumulate his collection, which is huge, by the way. But yes, people who are into this world can fixate on very, very specific things to the exclusion of all else.
I do think it's funny that there are certain franchises that I can imagine where even if you focus on them exclusively, you still have opened up yourself to a ridiculously wide breadth. I mean, honestly, the fact that you just said that guy who had his very, very specific niche has a huge collection is already impressive. But I mean, literally one of the first things I thought of when you were talking about people who have like specifics is I thought, man, the people who chose He-Man got to be eating good.
Yep. I was remembering growing up in the 90s. Oh, go ahead.
No, He-Man is one of those weird ones even in the toy collecting world. You know, He-Man was popular in the 80s. It's never really been popular again. I mean, there have been
multiple
cartoons over the years, but for some reason, all of these toy companies keep cranking out He-Man and Masters of the Universe toys, and I don't know where they find all of the 45, 50-year-old people to buy this stuff, but they must be doing it because they keep making these toys.
He-Man was huge. That's all there is to it.
Understanding the reason why I thought He-Man specifically, and I don't know if this is an urban legend or how true, I never researched like He-Man deeply or anything. I remember hearing that the reason why He-Man's character designs are so weirdly disparate is because it was literally a company looking at all their like third-party toys they had access to and were like, okay, make a show that uses all these existing toys so that we have something to promote them. So it was like a set of unconnected toys before it was a show.
Yeah, exactly. And that actually, there are several other instances with stories like that where it's like either the toy came first, or I mean that's happened a lot. But
that's like that's 80s toys in a nutshell. Toy came first. Yeah. Write a script around the commercial for this toy.
Right, exactly. And the toys have like very weird origin stories and how they came to be.
That's because they hired a lot of Marvel Comics writers. Like, hey, you can make a story for this over the weekend.
Yeah,
like that's G.I. Joe.
Interestingly, despite the fact that I am the exact right age and demographic, I have never been a He-Man fan, and I don't have any He-Man toys.
What about the other big one?
Well, hold on, I'll get there because I think I know what you're going to say. But I'm not a He-Man fan either. But I think He-Man is fascinating as an existing thing, and especially in the conversation of toys, because like to me, He-Man is like the poster child for toy cartoon kind of thing. Now, when I think of this
but he's definitely among them. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, when I think of this concept, there are two other franchises that come to mind for very different reasons, and I'm betting one of them is what Auric was about to say. One is Transformers, but I don't consider that necessarily interesting for me personally, only because it's the same concept, just being done. Now, don't get me wrong, I had a shitload of Beast Wars toys. They were my favorite toys growing up. But I don't find it necessarily as interesting as He-Man's story, because He-Man's story is so weird. And then the other one that I had a bunch of is Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles toys. And that's what I think is fascinating, because I really feel like the people who were making the toys for that franchise were on a lot of drugs, because they would do things like, I don't know, put a pizza oven in the turtle's chest that shoots pizza discs.
It's the same development as with He-Man. It was big, and eventually you get to a point of, I don't know what to fucking do anymore. Let's just try this.
100%. There are the wackiest Turtles toys out there. I mean, they put them in astronaut suits. There was a crossover in the toys where they were Star Trek characters. What else? They've been, like Universal Monsters.
Because kids don't care. That was the thing they realized very long. Kids don't care as long as it's fun to play with. They will write the story to justify why Donatello is dressed as Data.
Yep. And that's another property that Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, the toys keep going. If you go to your local Target, you probably will see a bunch of them.
Yep.
And they continually revamp old versions. So they'll come out with a new version of that weird astronaut one from 20, 30 years ago. Yeah.
But the big
I've heard of Turtle Trek, but I'm super fascinated by it now. I'm going to have to Google this.
The big one I was going to ask about is not actually Transformers. It's G.I. Joe. Because G.I. Joe, I still will go down the aisle at Walmart with my daughter, and occasionally I'll see his tanks. I'm like, who is buying that, and why is it me?
And also, to keep this from being just a general toy conversation and still on the hobby thing, if you yourself collection involves any of these franchises we're talking about, I would like to know, like, what do you have to say about it?
I dipped my toe in at the beginning of the pandemic, and it's largely Star Wars vehicles I always wanted as a kid.
Nice.
Yeah, I'm just saying, additionally, he mentioned having a wide, eclectic collection.
And action figures. I've unfortunately started an action figure collection, and I don't know why.
Ooh, nice.
Again, I'm living out childhood dreams I never got as a kid. I'm like, Star Wars toys are expensive. Not getting those. Action figures, you always lose the bits. Not getting those. Now I'm an adult. I'm like, well, you know what, Mom? I'm going to buy all the toys I want.
Yep. Oh, my God. I have boxes and boxes of just bits. Swords, guns, claws, backpacks. I literally boxes of them for all the toys that I have.
It's funny. At this point, because like I said, I used to have like tons of Beast Wars toys and tons of Turtles toys. Those are my primary things growing up, those two franchises. I lost them sometime in my teens, probably in the move to a different state. And now when I think about my things that I own, I think I only own one thing that could be called a quote unquote pure toy. Like my Warhammer minis are basically toys, but that's a different conversation entirely.
They're very expensive, very breakable toys.
Yeah, but even my one thing that I would call a toy is still a Warhammer thing, which is I have one of the fully like action poseable unpainted Sororitas system that is on my desk. And I love it. I'll paint it one day.
Yeah. You know, you were talking about, so G.I. Joe, yeah, is a line that has been around since the 80s. I actually when I was young, I collected G.I. Joe. I haven't bought anything G.I. Joe in a really long time. It just didn't continue to hold enough interest for me when there were so many other unique things out there. But Transformers, I have a lot of Transformers throughout the years. And that actually brings me to, so it sounds funny to say, but there are, just like in any hobby, there are challenges to being a toy collector.
I can imagine.
And Transformers brings up an interesting one. So as a toy collector, and again, like I guess I would describe myself as a serious one. I have a toy room. I have all this stuff on display. You have to really think about how you're going to display these things. And with Transformers, you start with a very simple question. Am I putting this out in robot mode or in alt mode? And you have to And do you do that individually? Do you do that by, by series, by grouping, by class? Like there are all of these different things you can at least think about when you go to set up your display.
As a related note, I can imagine you seeing that video from a year or two back of the auto transforming Optimus Prime toy and salivating.
Oh my God, it was so cool. And I got to see it in person, what was it, last year at BotCon? And, well, no, I'm sorry, BotCon, TFCon, I was going to make TFCon. That's the one that is.
But there are multiple Transformers conventions with which to get mixed up.
Well, there have been. I think BotCon has been retired. I think TFCon is the only one now. But yeah, that thing's awesome. And they made they have a prototype of a Grimlock, and that's the one I would want. But,
awesome. Yeah, if you're listening to this and you haven't seen it, you can find the YouTube. It's like a 2 foot tall Optimus Prime, the original like Gen 1 Optimus Prime that is like remote control transforming. Action. It's awesome to watch.
It's fucking
and
insane.
It's
voice
activated. You tell it what to do. It's crazy.
Yeah. Anyway, you said you have many Transformers.
I do. I have many Transformers. Some going all the way back to Generation 1. And yeah, so you know, when very few people have unlimited space to put out their toys.
Yep.
I'm sure somebody out there does. I don't.
Not in America anymore. It's getting smaller and smaller.
And by the way, right? I can totally imagine if I had all the money in space, I would get two of each Transformer so I can have it in both forms next to each other.
Exactly.
Set up a museum.
There was just an article. Some guy got the Guinness World Record for the biggest Transformers collection. I just saw that the other day. But anyway, so when you have a collection that you want to display, you have to think about things like, how am I going to maximize, you know, how much stuff I can put out versus what I can see? Because like if you like classic 3¾-inch G.I. Joe figures, and you have a ton of them. Well, if you just stand them all up on a shelf, you're only going to be able to see the ones in the front. You're just going to see heads behind that, right? Mm-hmm. So you have to think about, am I going to get some kind of riser system for my shelves? Am I going to have magnets and put them in interesting places? Am I going to set up like a scene, you know, like...
Yeah, because the vehicle's got to come into play.
Exactly. And again, with Transformers, it's like, it's kind of a fun one to think about. It's like, oh, well, you know, am I going to put it out in robot mode? And then maybe one day I'll go and, you know, change, you know, I'll transform all the ones. So they'll all switch to the other mode on my shelves. And mine are a total mishmash because I like some more in one mode than the other. And just, it's all good. I like to just see them all on the shelf.
By the way, to cut back to Ben 10 real quick, I just realize is the wrong word. I just had a moment of like getting into, because Ben 10, I was already basically a grown person by the time Ben 10 was out. Mm-hmm. So I was impressed by it, but it wasn't something that I watched a lot. but I can totally see 8-year-old me wanting an Omnitrix toy that doesn't have to do anything specific, just has to do the whole like rising out, pushing in part, and I would have lost my damn mind. So like, is that one you have? Something like that? Out of curiosity?
You know what? I did have an Omnitrix toy. I gave it to a child friend of mine so he can enjoy playing with it.
You know what? I thumbs up to that. The little Andy moment.
And just like that, yeah, Axel's exactly. off the heist with me. He was asking like, well, you know, Ulrich's planning a heist. Maybe it's something I want to get in on in there. Maybe he's got that Omnitrix I want. So that's the big question.
I'm not saying I wouldn't steal an upgrade toy because that's my favorite Ben 10 alien.
Upgrade's awesome. They're all awesome. I love Ben 10. I did peter off in I don't even know if it was the last series. They may have done more later, but there was a point at which they radically changed the character designs and sort of restarted the show for younger kids again. And I was I'm good. I'm good at this point.
Well, you know what's funny? Not to change tack, but I had something similar to what you just described happened to me with Turtles, because like, I don't know if I've made it clear in recording, but I'm a massive Turtles fan. I have multiple Turtle blankets that I still use. I'm wearing a Teenage Turtle shirt right now, actually. And it's a 1980s one where you got the letters on their belts, like little superheroes and everything. Like, I fucking love Teenage Turtles. And yet I wasn't into this recent movie, but I didn't think it was bad. I literally had that feeling of like, okay, this is meant for a new generation of people that are not me, that are young now, and that's okay. Yeah. I'm glad that they have.
Yeah, and that's exactly. I had very similar feelings. And Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, like something like Star Trek or something, you know, one of these other franchises. I talk about this a lot. I'm a hardcore fan of a lot of things, but I'm a general lover of geekdom and fandom, and I want the things that I'm into to be successful and to bring in more people. So I'm always okay if my, you know, one of my favorite properties has an aspect to it that I'm not super into, because it's going to bring in other people and it's going to make it more profitable and successful overall. I'm like a huge Star Trek nerd. Toys, watch all the stuff, you know, everything else. Lower Decks, I don't particularly like it. And that's, but I love that it's out there. I love that people love it. I love that there are jokes and memes online. I love that it's brought in new audience. It's great. And so, yeah, similar thing about the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Movie's fine. My kids loved it, which is cool, because now they're, you know, into Turtles. And that's, again, and maybe we'll get cool toys from it, too.
Well, I will say, Scott, you and I are on the same boat with Trek. I mean, you have talked about this before, because, like, I love Strange New Worlds, but I didn't like Discovery. Mm-hmm. I don't care for Picard. And I like half of Lower Decks. But again, I like the fact that Trek is big enough that they can do these very, very different things at the same time. But anyway, that's a little off topic. But related question, you talked about new people, and we were having this kind of tangential conversation about new generations and whatnot. So that brings us to a interesting question. How would you say people can get into this hobby? Again, this feels like we'll go to a store and buy toys, but what insight do you have as someone who is part of the hobby, for someone who's maybe just getting into it?
Yeah, no, and that's a really interesting question, because yeah, it's one thing to just wander into a Target or a Walmart, or if you're in another country, I guess Toys R Us still exists somewhere.
Lucky bastards.
And just to buy something. And obviously, if that's you, that's awesome. That's great. There are certain things that you can think about if you are an aspiring collector of toys and you are going to build a collection. And it sort of harkens back to some of the stuff that I talked about before. It's a lot of toy collectors, they really like one kind of style of toys or one size or scale of toys. And that going forward will affect how much you spend, the ease of which you'll find to get the toys that you're interested in. And also it'll have pretty huge ramifications for how you want to display your stuff. I mean, if you are like, let's say you're looking to, you know, you're going to go all in on hot toys that are, you know, 12 inches tall, each figure is $200 at minimum. You're going to need a lot of space to put those toys out for any, you know, sizable quantity of them. And you're going to be on import websites. You're going to have to get their, you know, super early to try to find the exclusives because there are a ton of them. And that's going to be much more challenging than, you know, I'm going to jump into Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and go and get all of the new stuff that's coming out right now that you can easily go into Target and get or go on Amazon and get.
That raises a question in my head about a very, I'm not to get to another specific franchise, but I do feel like it might be unique. And I'm curious how a toy collector in the community sees it. But when I think of something like Hot Wheels, I think that that's almost designed from the ground up to be collected. Like it's almost like a collection primary and a toy secondary. I mean, that's not the case when you look at the accessories, but I can think of all the times I've seen like, hey, here are these different kinds of very specific cars. And all I can think is no kid's going to know the distinction between that car toy and that car toy. They just know that it's a car toy. So just, I don't know. I don't know what exactly I'm asking, but does Hot Wheels have like some sort of special? Like,
it would have to, like collection? Thinking about it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, Hot Wheels. Hot Wheels is actually fascinating when it comes to collecting, because if you look on a Hot Wheels package on the bottom, there's always a code. So it's, and because Hot Wheels come out in waves, like a lot of mass market toys do, but there are always codes so you know what number vehicle this one is out of however many in that individual series. So, and that's obviously, like you said, that's for the collectors, not the kids who are just buying it. But their Hot Wheels are priced for kids to buy and for, you know, parents to buy for their kids. But there is it's like the meme of the iceberg for internet stuff, where it's like, oh, you know, on the top is, you know, whatever. But then you go down underneath the waterline. That's what collecting is for Hot Wheels, because, oh my God, there are textbook size compendiums of all of the different variations of Hot Wheels that have been out, and price guides.
Yep.
And
I used to thumb through them every time at bookstores.
Oh yeah, yeah. And every time a new wave of Hot Wheels come out, there are special versions that have rubber wheels instead of the hard plastic wheels.
Ooh.
And collectors we'll find out when stores get new shipments and when they put them out. And there, like, I know a guy who dabbles in that kind of stuff, but there are clubs who will organize people going to stores when those come out and try to grab them all to distribute to their own people and then scalp them, obviously. But yeah, there is a huge collector world for Hot Wheels.
And that is kind of like the dark side of the collection business of like, these are meant for children and you're kind of taking the fun out of it.
Well, scalpers ruin everything.
Oh yeah. But I mean, just there's a reason that Yu-Gi-Oh cards and Pokemon cards are behind the counters at retail stores now, which
just funny. Cause you were talking about scale and you mentioned scale at the beginning and you foreshadowed it and then talked about scale again. And just, we start talking about like that kind of thing. Like it just made Hot Wheels pop in my head. And I was like, that's gotta be like unique even among other franchises in this conversation.
Yeah, no, for sure. And again, that the fact that, you know, if you were just going to go and sort of just buy Hot Wheels at the store, like they're $1 a piece. Like, yeah, that's a super easy thing to get into, especially, you know, for the price point, especially. But again, even Hot Wheels, not only are there these special versions that, you know, you have to be the first one to go get, there have been a lot of exclusive Hot Wheels over the years.
Yep.
So again, if you're going to try to hunt those down, you got to go to Comic-Con, you got to, you know, get all these different things if you want to go to that level.
That's what I am curious about, Scott, if you have a golden fleece, like a toy that you are questing for.
Oh man, yes. There have been a number of them over the years, but I've kind of, as I've matured, I've come to appreciate my collection more, and I'm not running out and hunting down too many things these days. But however, I will say, this goes back to Robotech that I talk about quite a lot. But the third part of Robotech, which is based on the anime series Mos Pita, Genesis Climber, Mos Pita, the whole thing. But there was a specific toy that was made for that anime that was, there's this whole complicated history of it. But essentially, the main company that was going to release it didn't release it, but some of them had already gone out to some of the distributors. So there's a subsidiary that only released it in France. and there's only like a handful of these out in the world. I've seen a couple of them in person, always behind glass or from far away. It's the Beta Fighter, and whenever they go up for sale, it's well over $1,000, and it's a very small toy. It would be awesome to have one of those one day, but again, like more recently, another company made like a new version of it, which is, and it's a different scale, it's much bigger, but it's really cool, and I have one of those, so I'm like, yeah, that's okay.
See, I was gonna wonder about that, because I am seeing more of it, of these companies re-releasing vintage toys. Like, it's not a collectible, but if you're a kid and you wanted a Cobra Commander as an adult, Hasbro is just going to give you a Cobra Commander or a He-Man or any of these toys.
I'm betting this is what you're talking about, Scott, the re-release, not the original thing, because I was super curious. I just Googled Beta Fighter toy to see what came up, and I see on eBay a Toynami Robotech Masterpiece Blue Alpha Beta Fighter Mospeda for $400.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, those are the newer ones, yeah, which are, I assumed it was the newer one.
And even that one is $400.
But yeah, or like, and specifically, a lot of what you're talking about is Hasbro has been doing this now.
Hasbro's been milking it hard.
Oh my God, yeah. And a lot of them are specific. They specifically go to Walmart, but they've just been literally re-releasing original G1 Transformers and original G.I. Joe stuff. And yeah, it's you're literally getting the toy that we had when we were little. Or if you're slightly younger, you just missed it.
Yep.
And it's awesome for people to be able to get that stuff, for sure.
You know what's funny, as a related note? I remember that I'm not going to spend any time ragging on the Transformers movies. The internet's done that for fucking decades at this point. But I remember that when that first Transformers movie came out, I was fairly young, but I remember even then realizing, like, there are too many moving parts on that. A real physical toy of that wouldn't work. And that bothered me, like, as a kid, you know? So yeah. Transformers have to look like physical toys for them to feel right, weirdly enough.
Yeah, and it's funny, you know, talking about Transformers, over the decades of Transformers toys, Hasbro and Takara in Japan, the pendulum has swung wildly between incredibly difficult to transform toys and very simple to transform. And it's always interesting when the pendulum moves, because you'll see people in the toy collecting world who are ecstatic, but also you'll see people who are absolutely outraged and flipping tables when it goes in either direction. And it's so funny. You can never please everybody, no matter what you do. And I do say, I'll say, I have in my collection a couple of the, what are called the one-step transforming toys, which are actually really fun. Oftentimes it'll be something like, there'll be a car. There was like a Bumblebee version where you just grab with both hands, you grab the back, you know, right and left sides, and you pull them around, and that just transforms the whole thing. And then it's a robot. Fun, great for kids. And then I have all the way up through, there was a line of Transformers. It was mainly in Japan. They did come out here called Alternators. The Japanese name is escaping me at the moment, but they were about like 8-inch toys, and they were in car mode. They were very, very accurate, and they were all all real cars. And they were the hardest goddamn toys to transform. And famously the one that was my favorite that I had to get, and I have transformed it, is Grimlock as a Mustang. And my God, the nightmares of transforming that thing.
Oh boy.
Yeah.
I remember that when, by the way, I Googled one step transformer, and I can see, I'm pretty sure, the exact Bumblebee you're talking about. And I totally understand just looking at it, how it works, which is really neat. I just Googled Mustang Grimlock, and I'm seeing some interesting looking, I don't know how that works, but I remember one of the biggest Beast Wars toys I had, I don't remember the name of it, but it was like a manta ray that was like a foot wide and like a foot, like it was big, and it had so many moving like parts to its transformation that I don't know if I ever, as a, you know, now it'd be fine probably, but like as a, sure. you know, as like a 7 year old, I couldn't figure that shit out.
Yeah, and I will say that one of the really great things that Hasbro has sort of figured out over the years with Transformers, and this is filtered down to other toys too, but nowadays when toys are designed that you really have to move and convert stuff, if you put basically those parts are all ball and socket joints now, so that if you put too much pressure, they're more likely to just pop out and you can stick them back together. Whereas when we were kids, if you put too much pressure, that thing would shatter and it was just going in the trash.
Yep.
And just like that, Optimus only had one arm.
I shattered my Megatron toy. I remember that. I had the T-Rex Megatron where he had the squirt gun. As the T-Rex head, yep. And I remember shattering part of that. I don't remember what part, but I remember I kept the head because I was like, it's a squirt gun. I'm keeping the shit.
Yeah. You know, and that reminds me when talking about sort of along the lines of when you're asking about like factory errors in toys where, yeah, like the wrong name is on the package or the figure's got two legs or two left legs. There are some toys that are also famous and interesting to collectors because they only came out in one country, but not another for certain reasons or, you know, things like that. So when you talked about Megatrons, I have a reissue of the G1 Megatron that came out, man, I don't even know, at this point, probably 15 years ago. But I got it from Japan. So it technically, it's not, you shouldn't have it in the United States because it looks like a real gun and it doesn't have any orange tip on it.
Oh, yeah, I've heard about this one.
Absolutely. Yep. Yeah, which absolutely they would not re-release in that form ever again. But
yeah, I googled G1 Megatron. It's one of the first things that comes up. I was like, that looks like a real gun.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
Well, wasn't that an issue at the time, too?
Yeah, parents were a little worried about, like, hey, that's it's a Luger, like, straight up.
Well, didn't, like, I thought someone robbed a bank with one at some point, and that became, thing.
I want to share this image. Is this what you're talking about?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
It's it's incredibly realistic. It's just the the gun.
Yeah, I could be wrong, but I could have. I could have swore somebody robbed a bank with one, and it became like this whole big thing. Like, okay, and then like Hasbro's were like, they're so realistic, which brilliant bit of PR.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I even have a Megatron from I can't remember which one, but it's. They went back and did Megatron as a gun again at one point, and it's a very silly looking. I mean, it looks like a Nerf Super Soaker kind of crossover. It's brightly colored, and even that has a big old orange tip on it. You know, to follow all the rules, this is.
I mean, listen, a real gun. And this is America. We're not going to go down the rabbit hole of why you have to clearly identify your guns as toys. If you know, you know.
I have another scale question, which is also a franchise question, which is when I think of like big toys versus small toys, I remember when I was, you know, a kid looking for toys, I remember thinking that anytime I saw a kaiju toy of any kind that wasn't at least a foot big, I felt disappointed. So I feel like if I was looking at the idea of like large toys, then Godzilla might be where I would look at. Am I on base at all in that thought?
What you might be thinking of is going back to the Shogun toys, or what, I mean, that's what they were called here in the United States. The names have changed over the years, but yeah, there have been very traditional versions of some of these characters in very specific scales. It's not quite as strict anymore. So many different companies are getting in on these, you know, on these properties and things. But yeah, and like I was saying, some people though will very specifically be like, no, I'm only getting, you know, the large. Also, when we talk about scales, it also comes down to materials that are used. So, and that's a whole other conversation. But whether something is die-cast or ABS plastic or blow mold, there's all these different things, but
I totally understand that because I didn't mean to interrupt you. I got this out. I remember having this one turtle toy. I don't know what, because like I someone had gifted to me, and it was like soft plastic. So it almost felt like what I imagined an actual turtle felt like. And from that day forward, I couldn't handle hard plastic turtles anymore.
Yeah, the famous squishy head turning into Ninja Turtles toys. Yeah, and just like it's as you can imagine, the complexity of the cost versus safety versus detail and paint when it comes to the different materials is a whole other, you know, convoluted discussion in and of itself.
Yeah. Oh, strong memories. I also remember having I think one of the first toys I remember as like a conscious person was a remote control, like 2 to 3 foot tall King Kong that just like walked forward. Mm. That's all I remember it doing, but it's a very strong memory for me. Walking in the kitchen.
I think mine was an inflatable Godzilla. I remember like my Godzilla phase hit hard and fast when I was 4 because kid of the 90s and Godzilla was on daytime TV a lot. So I have distinct memories of a lot of those early 90s imported from Japan Godzilla toys. Yep. And yeah. Some of those I would beat a nun with a stick to get. Like I have such nostalgia for.
I had an American Godzilla toy that kicked ass because it had like the open mouth and scream abilities. So,
no, yep. Anyway. Yep.
There's just, I'd have this little series of figures. Yeah. That's what I want to get back. I had this amazing series of figures that I haven't been able to recapture because I've been trying to find a great Showa era Godzilla and a great Showa era Mecha Godzilla, and I haven't been able to find one because, as Scott pointed out, the market has just blown up because you can get so much more. And it's like that's not what I'm after. So you're literally shifting through so much. Like, no, getting closer, not for that price.
You just made me violently remember my giant Space Godzilla toy I had.
I want Space Godzilla too. Space Godzilla is awesome. Space Godzilla toys suck though. I don't know why.
When I say it was big. It was like, I don't know how, like maybe 2 feet tall. Which, you know,
damn.
Huge toy. Like, and it had the giant crystal shoulders. And it didn't have much mobility, but its arms moved. And I loved that toy.
Mine were all like, anyway. I think 8 inches.
So great. Yeah. I mean, this conversation is one of the reasons why I love being a toy collector. Because there's such a nostalgia and like, no matter who you talk to, at some point in their life, they had a toy that they loved for one reason or another, you know, and whether it's for fun reasons or it got them through a hard time, everybody has it. And I love to tell this, it's brief, a brief story. So again, I have a whole room in my house that's full of toys, and people come over, you know, for whatever reason, most people be like, oh my God, what the hell is this? If they're geeks, they'll geek out with me. But occasionally, you know, we'll have somebody come over to the house who is not a geek at all. And one time we had a plumber that we called to the house, and this was, he was an older gentleman. He was really gruff, and he walked through the front part of the house, and he just kind of like grunted and just, he had no time for the toys, didn't care at all, right? He went through, you know, did his work. And then on his way out, he was walking back through the room, and he happened to see out of the corner of his eye a toy that sparked in him exactly what we were just talking about. And he was like, is that? And then I said, oh, yeah, come over, take a look. And unfortunately, I can't remember exactly what it was. It was either, I think it was, I have a couple of copies of the small corgi Buck Rogers starfighter from the TV show. Buck Rogers in the 25th century. And like, it was either that or something from Battlestar Galactica, but
it was a Ratatouille moment.
Yeah, exactly. He turned into a different person. He was remembering the toy and the series and what he loved when he was younger, and we were talking about it, and it was so awesome. And it's like one of my favorite memories from, you know, the last 20 years. I loved it.
So I'm really glad that, first of all, that story is awesome. And literally the next question I was going to ask you is, what about the hobby brings you joy? You're free to elaborate further, but that already is a pretty good answer.
Yeah, no, I mean, I love toys. I don't know what it is, but
toys are fun. That they don't stop being fun when we become adults. That's the thing.
Like, yeah, absolutely.
They don't stop being fun. They're still fun to take out of the case and handle around.
Yeah. And, you know, and I collect, you know, really deeply in certain lines. For a long time, I've been a really big fan of Green Lantern and that sort of that part of the DC universe. And I have a ton of Green Lantern toys.
If you haven't seen Scott's Green Lantern collection, it's insane.
Yeah, I'll say when this goes live, I'll make sure I have some pictures up on social media so people can see. I've always loved spaceships and flying things, and I have just a metric ton of spaceship toys. And yeah, and when I open them up, I fly them around and yep. make all the noises. And I love playing with toys. And then I love putting them out and being able to walk through and look at all of them. And again, my collection is so eclectic. I can walk through and like, and again, I've got Green Lantern stuff. You know, I've got Marvel and DC, you know, Transformers. I've got multiple shelves of My Little Pony toys. And I love, they're so colorful and different, you know, the unique character designs. You know, I've got stuff that typically would, you know, again, would be for girls and whatever, but toys are universal. Like you like the colors, the patterns, the, you know, the way that it's just, I'm very passionate about toys. I love them. I hate when people gatekeep toys.
No,
do you have any, out of curiosity, you got any, Trek ships?
Oh my God. So many.
I want to ask the question because I want to know if you got a Bird of Prey. I want to know if you got a Warbird. I want to know if you got a Constitution class. You got a Galaxy class. What you got?
I'll put it this way. I probably have at least one of every ship that was ever made in an easy to collect form. And then I have massive amounts of Federation stuff in general, but specifically Defiant, Excelsior. Yes. Are all have been my favorite. So I have a lot of those.
I would want to define it myself.
See, this is one of my favorite things about talking to you, Scott, is mention any franchise and Scott will be like, oh yeah, I got this sick toy from that. It has happened multiple times. I've been having a conversation with Scott and he's like, oh yeah, no, I have that toy. And it's like, I didn't even know that existed.
It's funny. When I used to do a lot more Twitch streaming on my own, I would do entire streams about toys when I would open up toys and basically like review toys live on stream. And inevitably somebody in chat would talk about something or I'd think of something and I'd say, hold on a second. And I would get up and go to the, you know, and then
you still do that when you stream with Jess, you're like, hold on. I've got a toy for this situation. You'll go off screen and then you'll come back with something like, I didn't even realize they made toys for that movie.
Oh, well, yeah, then I think this is a long shot. And so if you say no, I won't be surprised. Got anything from Megas XLR?
Sadly, no. There was one toy. I believe there was only one toy that was made, but it wasn't.
I figured.
Yeah, and it wasn't very good. But I have been keeping my eye on. There have been people who have done 3D models of it that are pretty good.
Oh, sweet Jesus, yes.
So, yeah. So I'm looking at getting from that. But yeah, I'll be God. If you're listening to this and you're a fan of robots and you do not know what Megas XLR, look it up. I'm pretty sure you can watch it on YouTube. But yes.
There's plenty of places you can watch it.
It's amazing.
It is my favorite giant robot in fiction.
Yeah.
And I mean, I'm a fan of a lot of giant robots, but Megas is my favorite.
No, it's
so good.
We did a whole series where we reviewed the first season over on the Patreon, which was a lot of fun. Because that show still holds up. And now that we're adults, we're like, there are references I didn't even catch when I was a kid.
Yep.
Now, no hobby discussion would be complete without at least a question of, if it's a hobby, there's probably something about it that can be frustrating. Care to share?
Sure. So in general, you know, when people hear that you've got, you know, that you're a toy collector, whatever, there's, you know, there's a lot of nonsense that people will say, and that doesn't really bother me so much. But you know, if you are an aspiring toy collector, you know, that's a thing. There's a trifecta of things that are annoying as a toy collector. The first one is dust.
Yeah. Model people. Sucks. We as model people can understand this one.
Yep.
Yes. And again, I'm very lucky to be in the position that I'm in, but at the time when, you know, I was really establishing my toy room, I had a bunch of like mismatched IKEA shelves and bookshelves and things that I had my toys on. And again, very luckily, my wife, who's in the film industry, she actually designed, cabinets from my toy room, and we had them built, and they all have glass doors in front of them. So it doesn't eliminate dust completely, but it massively reduces the dust. So, but yes, dusting is a consideration when you have stuff. And then, you know, you can get things like canned air and blow the dust, but if you have really small stuff, then it's going to knock things over, you know. So keep that in mind. Animals, if you have pets, toy collecting may not be for you, depending on what kind of annoying cats you have. Keep that in mind. I've definitely lost some things to the cats that we have, but it happens. And then lastly, and this might be more specific to where I live in Southern California, but I have to worry about earthquakes.
I was going to ask, if you don't mention earthquakes, I'm going to.
Yeah. So there's a phenomenon in toy collecting or toy displaying called shelf divers. And this is when a toy will, on its own, many times, will just fall down.
Yeah.
And it happens. Yeah, it happens to everybody. Certain toy lines are more known for that than others. I for instance, fans of Justice League Unlimited. Great cartoon, interesting character designs. The toys are garbage. They have the tiniest stick legs and little feet and gigantic torsos. And if you don't have them on display bases, they will fall down. And then, so again, if you have like a collection with a bunch of stuff on it, one shelf diver could take out an entire shelf's worth of toys. And again, it happens, you know, what are you going to do? But so again, with my collection, luckily I do have glass doors. So even if there's a shelf diver, or even in the case of an earthquake, stuff's going to fall down, but it'll be within its area.
It's contained at least.
On the same shelf. Exactly. And again, and if the earthquake is big enough where the doors are actually pushed open, then I got other stuff to worry about.
Yeah.
More than the doors anyway. Yeah.
No, I've got a Moon Knight right now that keeps trying to take everyone else out next to him every time he decides to tip over. And it's like, just stop. Stay up there with your fiddly bits and stop taking everyone out on the way down.
Like, I don't have anything like what you guys are describing, but that Sisters of Battle toy I mentioned earlier, it has a stand and still likes to fall over.
Yep, I've got that one as well. She's off in a corner because she kept taking people out.
Yep. And you can come up there, you know, there's this like museum putty stuff that you can get. That's like a little, it's like a tack.
Yeah. Blue tack.
Put under their feet and stick them down. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So there are things that, you know, that you can do or get, there are all these display little bases that you can buy to mitigate stuff like that. But those definitely things to think about when you're putting your collection on display. And again, the toys can be very, very expensive. So you definitely don't want a lot of stuff falling down and crashing and breaking for sure.
It's more just the little bits flying off, because my Moon Knight, he's from the show, so he's got the twin crescent moon sights, and I'm like, oh, if I ever lose those, it's going to be childhood all over again. Like, oh, God, no!
I remember one more question about franchise, just because I want to know if you have something like this. I remember when I was growing up, I was never big into Power Rangers myself. I have some friends who are, but I always thought that the Zords and the Megazord were awesome, but I always wanted, I knew that they had them, but they were very expensive. Like, a version of the Megazord that was actually the other functional Zord toys that would come together. Like, most of the time, the Megazord toys were just that. They didn't come apart or anything like that, and the Zord toys wouldn't combine. But I know they existed. I know they were expensive.
Do you have anything like that?
So I don't. And it's interesting. We were just talking about this on a stream the other day. It was with Powerpuff Girls. Powerpuff Girls and Power Rangers, interestingly, came out around the same time. I think, were they both in 99?
Power Rangers, 93, 94. Powerpuff Girls, 99, 98.
I'm checking this because this is weird. Interesting to me.
Yeah. So anyway, in the mid 90s, I was graduating from high school and starting college. 93. Okay. So I was still in high school at the time, but there are a couple of big properties that I sort of missed it when they first came out and never had the time to get into them later. And Power Rangers is one of those. I've never watched it. I might have a Power Ranger toy, but just because like the design caught my eye. But I know over the years, they have done various styles of the Zords in, again, in different scales. Transforming ones and combining ones. They are out there for sure.
Wunvog has one of the Green Ranger daggers that plays the music when you press the buttons.
Yeah.
A few years ago, I came dangerously close when they re-released the original Megazord. Like, it was the one from the 90s. And I'm like, oh, I need you. Then I saw the price and I went, oh, no, I don't. That's... Listen, I'm an adult and I have money I can spend, but I can't justify that. The thing's 3 feet tall.
Yeah. And I do want to note that within toy collecting, my situation is a little bit even more unique. And because inevitably some people are going to see my toy collection and be like, oh my God, you know, you've spent thousands and thousands of dollars, which I have. But at the same time, I have actually, it's hard to say worked in quotes, as a toy reviewer for many, many years. I wrote toy reviews for figures.com from 2007 until 2020 almost. And then since then I've written for another site. And because of that, so I've reviewed hundreds and definitely over 1,000 reviews, you know, over the years. But because of that, I did get a lot of things as review samples. So there's a lot of stuff in my collection that I didn't actually go out and purchase, that I was, you know, that I got from the companies directly, which definitely helps to make a big collection.
Which would probably also mean you've probably got a handful of things that maybe are from IPs that you would not necessarily have sought out yourself, but now you've got the sample.
Absolutely. And oftentimes with those, as I've taught my kids, I try to find the right people who would enjoy them and then, you know, donate or give those away. And I've done a lot of that over the years, for sure. Getting stuff, I'm like, I don't care about this, but I'll review it. And then I'm going to find somebody else who actually wants this thing.
Again, another Andy moment. I appreciate that.
And along with, you know, being a toy reviewer, I've gotten to go, I've been lucky to be able to go to a lot of conventions over the years. I live in Southern California, so
you got pretty decent access.
I do. Yes. Much more than some other people. So yes, I've been very, very lucky to have that as sort of part of how I've been able to be, such a prolific toy collector.
Well, you know, we've gone a little over, but that's fine because we always love talking to Scott. But I know we could literally talk for a long time. So I'm going to say we'll kind of wrap here. But it's at this point, before we move on, that if you have any concluding thoughts about your hobby you want to give to the listeners, go for it.
Sure. If you're listening to this and you have, you know, a handful of toys, or, you know, you fondly look at the toys when you're walking down the aisle at Target, buy toys. They can be so much fun. You, no matter where you live, whatever your living situation is, I guarantee you've got a place to put some toys, either in your bedroom or at work, you know, even if you work in some cubicle, having toys. I have always, wherever I do my work, whether it's, you know, at a desk, in the office, at home, I always have a couple toys around. I play with them while I'm working. Toys are just, for me and for a lot of people, they're just such a way to enjoy life and enjoy characters and enjoy properties that you like. And yeah, toys are awesome. Play with toys.
And, you know, I was already like, I think Scott and I would get, like, get a good conversation, just have some drink, have a conversation like that. Now I hear you have this toy room, and like, I want to see the toy room.
Yep.
Also, I hear you just said Southern California.
Yeah, I'm in the LA area, so I go to LA. I mean, we go to Anime Expo and San Diego Comic Con, and we are spoiled for choice when it comes to conventions here.
I was just curious because most of my family is in San Diego, and so I was planning a trip there somewhat soon anyway, so I was thinking anyway.
we can talk.
All right, but at this point, as a thank, Ulrich, do you have any concluding thoughts about Scott's hobby?
No, I think this is a great test run of this format.
All right. Well, then, as a thank you for coming on and telling us about your toy collecting, and I love this conversation, then it's at this point we bring out the special soapbox that you can stand on. We give you the special spotlight, and you can plug anything you want to plug.
Awesome. Thank you. You know, I'll start with toys. So if you're interested in seeing what a toy review looks like, I've done, like I said, many, many, many of them. So if you go to figures.com, or if you site search figures.com and you put my name in, Scott Rubin, you can see a lot of toy reviews that I've done. And then again, most recently, I've reviewed some HeroClix and Star Trek Attack Wing over on actionfigureinsider.com. So you can check those out. Otherwise, I am Norse Meat, Norse like Vikings, meat like steak, at all the social medias. And you can pick up my book, Naming Your Little Geek, wherever books are sold. And then very last thing, I thought of just one other annoying thing that you can have as a toy collector is when people come into your house and look at all your toys, they will say, how many toys do you have? And I have no idea. I'm not counting toys. There are thousands of them. And also, how much is it all worth? That's not why I
These
have
are
them.
Not I questions know. I'm prepared to answer.
Scott is not a cataloger, but I'm sure there are people who are.
Sure, that's true.
If they're hanging on pegs, you know they're cataloged. If it's in a display cabinet, odds are no.
All right. Well, then we're going to move on to, real quick, do our suggestions of the week, which this is just something that each one of us has been into or seen or done recently that we're just suggesting to the audience. So real quick, I'll get mine out of the way, which is that I've been going through a James Bond marathon with Fred the Dino, one of the people in our Discord. And we just recently watched 1977, I believe, Spy Who Loved Me, which is a Roger Moore James Bond flick that I think is really good. And I admit, plenty of people who do not watch older movies in general. So I just want to recommend it. Spy Who Loved Me, Roger Moore, James Bond, good movie.
All right, I'll go next. I and the rest of the internet have been playing Helldivers 2 lately. The quick pitch before I get to the good pitch is it's a horde shooter that is inspired by 40K and Starship Troopers. But the other night, a group of us all got together. It was Wretched, Z, and my Bert and myself were playing the other day. Highlight moments from our game together was Bert and I committing an unintended last stand because the team just left us behind and we didn't realize it. Me turning with my machine gun after Wretched had filled me up and immediately killing Wretched. And Z dropping an airstrike on Wretched and I as we were about to leave the mission and then casually strolling onto the dropship himself. But the highlight of the game was Wretched going, hey guys, watch out, there's landmines over here. All three of us vault over a wall and Z lands directly on a landmine. It is some of the most fun I have had. I have declared it our new community game. If you have it and are looking for players, please come join our Discord. If you are in our Discord, please pick this up. It is an insane amount of fun.
All right, Scott, do you have anything to suggest to the audience?
And most people here are familiar with Warhammer 40K. I recently was looking for something new to read. I've read, at this point, it feels like almost all of the Space Marine novels. And I tried the first Caiaphas Cain book, which I didn't like. And I tried the first Gaunt's Ghost novel, which I loved. And I have been devouring them. And I'm literally on the last and Sabbat World anthology. I've read everything.
Oh, damn.
And it's been great. I just was like, this is all I'm going to do for the next few months. And I've read, I think, like the main 15 novels.
But yeah, there's a lot of novels in that series.
Yeah, and I've just torn through it, and they're great. They are freaking heartbreaking at times. I get so mad I want to throw it against the wall, but because I love the characters so much. So I highly recommend that series if you like sort of the more, you know, ground level war stories in 40K.
Plus, I know that I have not read the Gaunt's Ghost stuff myself, but I know that they have a very strong reputation within the lore community.
Yeah, Gaunt's Ghost is awesome. Yeah,
real good.
All right, well, Scott, thanks for coming on and talking with us.
I don't know why today, by the way, we have been way more over-talking each other than normal. Like, normally we have good cadence, but I think we're all just too excited.
Yeah.
To get Scott on.
It is. That's why there is a Scott file of that we just keep adding to. Like, ooh, Scott will be good for that one. Anyways, enough of that chatter. Thank you all for listening. Be sure to like, share, subscribe, do all the things, because we cannot stress this enough. The algorithm will not show this to people. Podcasts grow by you sharing it with your friends. If you want us to continue being a podcast and having these awesome conversations, we need you to share it with friends.
And whatever platform you're currently listening to us on, thank you for doing that. If there's another platform you want us to be on that we're not, tell us about it. And if it's feasible, a la not very expensive and easy to manage, then we'll make it happen.
As always, this has been Lord Commander Ulrich.
And his shield brother, Axel Wright.
Be sure to tune in next time. And as always, stay honorable.